The first reading this morning is from Isaiah chapter 58, verses 1 through 12. Shout out, do not hold back. Lift up your voices like a trumpet. Announce to my people their rebellion, to the house of Jacob their sins. Yet day after day they seek me and delight to know my ways, as if they were a nation that practiced righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask of me righteous judgments. They want God on their side. Why do we fast, but you do not see? Why humble ourselves, but you do not notice? Look, you serve your own interest on your fast day and oppress all your workers. You fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with a wicked fist. Such fasting as you do today will not make your voice heard on high. Is such the fast that I choose, a day to humble oneself? Is it to bow down the head like a bulrush and to lie in sackcloth and ashes? Will you call this a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them, and not to hide yourself from your own kin. Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up quickly. Your vindicator shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help, and he will say, "Here I am." If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in darkness and your gloom be like the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your needs in parched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in.
Scripture reading is from 1 Corinthians 2, verses 1 through 16. When I came to you, brothers and sisters, I did not come proclaiming the testimony of God to you. This is Paul speaking. I did not come proclaiming the testimony of God to you with superior speech or wisdom. For I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. And I came to you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. My speech and my proclamation were made not with persuasive words of wisdom, but with a demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on the power of God. Yet among the mature we do speak wisdom, though it is not a wisdom of this age, or of the rulers of this age, who are being destroyed. But we speak God's wisdom, a hidden mystery, which God decreed before the ages for our glory, and which none of the rulers of this age understood. For if they had, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear had heard, nor the human heart conceived, what God has prepared for those who love him, God has revealed to us through the Spirit, for the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God. For what human knows what is truly human except the human spirit that is within? So also no one comprehends what is truly God's except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit that is from God, so that we may understand the gifts bestowed on us by God. And we speak these things in words not taught by human wisdom, but taught by the Spirit, interpreting spiritual things to those who are spiritual. Those who are unspiritual do not receive the gifts of God's Spirit, for they are foolishness to them. And they're not able to understand them because they are spiritually discerned. Those who are spiritual discern all things, and they are themselves subject to no one else's scrutiny. For who has known the mind of the Lord as to instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. May God add his blessing and lend understanding to the reading of his word. Paul was an educated man who decided for a time and for a purpose to know nothing. I've been ministering to people for about 20 years, and I've ministered a clientele that was born sometime in the early 19th century, all the way to people that were born in the early 20th century. So in that 100-year window, I've heard all kinds of colloquialisms and slang and sayings that I'm not familiar with. I remember the day one elderly person in the church greeted me and said, "What do you know?" I'd never heard that one before. What do you know? What am I supposed to know what about? What do I know? What does that mean? What do I know? And that you're supposed to say something funny back, like, "Not much," right? That's how you're supposed to answer that. Or whatever my wife will let me know, or something like that. You are supposed to make these comments. And this was a saying, this was a slang thing that people used to say, "What do you know?" Then I went to chaplaincy, and I had somebody in the chaplaincy group who was from the South, and she said to me one day, just cold out of the blue, "What you know good?" What you know good? What does that even mean? Slang. What do you know that's good? I guess is what that is. And so say something good to me, I guess, is what she was fishing for. Well, Paul decided that he was going to be someone who knew nothing. How educated was Paul? Very. Acts 22:3 describes St. Paul in a speech to the Jews trying to influence them by stating that he had been a student of Gamaliel. That's a handle. Gamaliel was his name. "I am a Jew," Paul said, "educated at the feet of Gamaliel." Who was Gamaliel? One source says it is certain that Gamaliel held a leading position in the Sanhedrin, that he enjoyed the highest repute as a teacher of the law. He was the first to be given the title of Rabban, which means teacher. So important was Gamaliel that when his name is even included in that body of writings that the rabbis put together called the Talmud. In the Talmud, it said that when Rabban Gamaliel, the elder, died, regard for the Torah, Jewish law, ceased, and purity and piety died. Pretty important figure. He was holding up the whole movement. Purity, piety, and regard for the law, like three pillars upon which Judaism existed. He was so essential to Judaism in his lifetime that when he died, it was like the religion went with him. And this was the guy that Saul, young Saul, sat at as a child, as a young person. As soon as he was old enough, he would be at Gamaliel's feet, listening to every wise thing coming out of his mind and his mouth. And surely he learned about preserving Jewish heritage in a world that's increasingly filled with Gentiles. But, you know, those of you that are teachers, those of you that have had brilliant students, you can't control what they're like after they're no longer your student. You know, they go off into the world and they become whatever they're going to become. And you can't control that. And likewise with Saul, young Saul, this bright pupil, where did he go wrong? He ended up joining this other sect called the Way. He started putting his faith in a man named Jesus, And he started to reinterpret and shake apart all the teachings that Gamaliel had given him. Gamaliel probably heard of what Paul was doing. Oh, by the way, he changed his name in the process. He was Saul, which is the name of Israel's first king, the United Kingdom's first king, Saul. And he decided he wanted to be Paul, which was more of a Gentile name, because Paul had it in his mind that he was going to reach out and teach the Gentiles. And Gamaliel just must have shaken his head. What has become of my student, Saul? Paul just had a different vision and a different mission than Gamaliel. Paul felt called right from the minute that his life changed. He felt called to reach out to Gentiles. As you recall, he met Jesus on the road to Damascus, and then suddenly he changed. Having that vision of seeing Jesus suddenly changed his life. And as important as Gamaliel was to him, suddenly Jesus was much more important. And so along that way, following Jesus from that point on, he went on to Corinth, which was one of the most largest and the most important cities in the Greek Empire, to begin his mission there. Paul stayed there for about 18 months, working among the people, starting a church. And they could have had as many as 5 house churches. Churches being illegal in places like that, house churches were the vogue. Meet in somebody's house. It's just a group of friends getting together. And they would have these churches devoted to the teachings of the one that Paul had met, Jesus. And he's finished his mission there. Scholars think he converted somewhere between 40 and 150 people during those 18 months. And he had created a church and then was writing back to them. He started to reflect on those 18 months that changed their lives, that created this church. And he said, "When I came to you, brothers and sisters, I did not come proclaiming the testimony of God to you with superior speech or wisdom. For I decided to know nothing." Well, not exactly nothing. He restricted his knowledge to one thing, and it was the one thing that Gamaliel never taught him. Paul wrote, "I decided to know nothing except Christ and him crucified." Paul said, in effect, "I'm going to set aside the fact that I'm a Jew. I'm going to set aside my ethnocentrism that comes with it. I'm going to forget that I sat at the foot of Gamaliel. I'm going to set aside all that rabbinical teaching that I had absorbed and all the things that are in the Talmud and all the things that are in the Torah, properly understood now, under the grasp of Jesus. Let's talk about Jesus and him crucified." Ecclesiastes 12:12 tells us, "Of making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh." Freed from his own tendency to bookishness, Paul found an even greater energy. Scriptures say he worked diligently among them. He asked them for nothing. He preached daily, and the people got the message. And as I said, they had a church. Do you know that church is still going? The church in Corinth still exists under the Archbishop of Athens and all Greece. Imagine that. A church that started 2,000 years ago still exists. Such is the power of focus. Such is the power of one thing. And not just any old one thing. It was the gospel. Of all the things that there were to know, and the Greek world was known for its ideas, one idea was more important than all the others. Jesus. The fact that we are sinners, that we're created for a purpose, but we've failed to be our best selves. The fact that we need forgiveness. The fact that Jesus died on the cross so that we could be forgiven. And those who put their trust in him One thing matters. For those who put their trust in him, that one thing, they have the power to receive eternal life. That's the whole reason for the church in Corinth and for the existence of all the churches that I've ever been brought up in or belong to. And the whole reason for the First Baptist Church of Penfield, it starts with Jesus. I've got some degrees. I've sat at the foot of some people. I really like that Indigo Girls line. I've spent 4 years prostrate to the higher mind. Yeah, I know what that feels like, to sit there under somebody's tutelage and have someone trying to impress upon you their ideas. And then suddenly, everything turns around, really. Of all the things I've ever learned, all the things I've ever experienced, it all comes down to one thing: Jesus and him crucified, the author and finisher of our faith, the one for whom this church was founded and the one who will keep this church going. Jesus is the central figure in our lives. It's our faith in him that transforms us from people that don't forgive into people who do, from people who don't serve others into people who do, from people who don't love others into people who do. Jesus is the central figure, our teacher, our example. Jesus and him crucified. I would be more prepared today if somebody walked up to me with an old colloquialism. If somebody said to me, "What's no good?" I could say, "Jesus. He's good. That's something good that I know." Someone could say, "Hey, what do you know?" "You know, I've learned some things, but there's one thing I really, really know. Jesus and him crucified."